Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back for a staggering 19th time with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate as NFL stats guru and a member of our 2015 Guest Hall of Fame class, Russell Baxter. And we say this all the time because it's true. No one on the planet knows more about every team and every player who's ever played in the NFL than Russell does. Be sure to check out Russell's website, profootballguru.com. You can also find his work on a number of great sites on the net, like NFL Spin Zone and FanSided. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at BaxFootballGuru. And by the way, and we've said this every single time as well, you know, Russell knows so much about the stats and the history of the game, but he's a 10 times better person than all of that stat stuff. And we are so honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Russ, Chris and Bob, how are you, my friend?
Hi, Russ. Oh, gentlemen, how have you been? It's been a while since we've talked. You know, nothing has been going on in the world.
Not.
No. And, what a Final Four that we have. Just, you know, the NFL just doesn't disappoint. And as much as you try to tell people that this is a year by year league, here are the Cincinnati Bengals.
Right.
Who 2 years ago won two games. And now they're a game away from the Super Bowl. But I'm going to do a little quick, it's not even trivia, but this is something I find fascinating about the last four teams left. You've got the last three Super Bowl runner-ups among the final four. And then a team that the last time they were in the Super Bowl, there was no Jacksonville Jaguars or Carolina Panthers. There are 28 teams in the league. There was an AFC Central, not an AFC North.
Yeah.
Boomer-sized the quarterback, and John Taylor caught the game-winning touchdown pass.
Yeah. How would that be if we get a repeat of the Bengals and 49ers in the Super
Bowl?
Well,
the Bengals only had to play the 49ers in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's it. You know, they lost to them in Super Bowl 16. They lost to them in Super Bowl 23. And here's the funny thing. If they did play them a third time, and Chris, I know you won't miss this one. There's only ever been one other occurrence.
Yes.
Teams have played in the Super Bowl three times.
Yes. Pittsburgh and Dallas.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Again, history is very, very funny. But what a round of games we had. We had three road teams win. Happened in 2008, the year the Steelers won the Super Bowl against Arizona. Then you were talking to Trey Essex, you know, so there's a tie-in right there.
Yep.
We saw every game ended on the last play of the game as far as deciding the win. Every game. So it was, I mean, you can't get much more for your bang for your buck than what we saw this weekend. And again, it was a year where we saw, you know, half the teams that made the playoffs last year, Bob and Chris, didn't make it this year.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, really is. Russ, I want to get your thought real quick. One of the things we've been talking about tonight is, you know, obviously the Kansas City Buffalo game was a thriller, and the last couple of minutes of that game just had everybody on the edge of their seats, and whoever touched the ball last was going to win, which is what happened. But one of the things we've been talking about is Josh Allen, and fantastic talent and all of that, but he's almost been their leading rusher this season. I wanted to get your thoughts really quickly on Allen and his future in the game. Can he be a quarterback that plays 10 or 15 years in the league if he keeps running as much as he does?
Well, eventually that's going to catch up with him, and it's because it's caught up with everybody. And listen, the first 2 years, it's interesting with Josh Allen because the first 2 years in the league, he was really kind of running for his life. And then, you know, somewhere in that second year, he began running with a purpose. And now it's become part of his game. And it was part of the game that you didn't really hear about Josh Allen because all you heard about was that raw ability and that strong arm and so on. But I also think as you continue to run the way he does, And that's why Buffalo's running game numbers are a little deceptive. Okay. Cause your quarterback really doesn't kill the clock. All right. He's usually scrambling to run. You know, your offensive line is not necessarily dominating the line of scrimmage, which is part of ball control, which is part of play action passing, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, that's something I think he needs to check. And the one thing I still say, for as good as Josh Allen has been these past 2 years, and the numbers are phenomenal, still a little careless when it comes to taking care of the football. He will turn over the football, both interception-wise and – I mean, they beat Atlanta in mid-December. He threw three picks without a touchdown pass. So he's had at least – he's had, each of his four seasons, he's turned over the ball a minimum of double digits. Again this year, you know, so – now, in the playoffs, the Bills didn't commit a turnover at all. But that's part of his game that has to change. Because eventually those mistakes do catch up with you. And part of those mistakes are when he is running. And, you know, he'll just drop the ball. Or he doesn't feel the sack and the ball comes out and so on. So, you know, Buffalo got hot at the end of the year, but it was such an uneven year for them. If you think about it, I mean, they had their moments where they were red hot and then lost to Jacksonville.
Right.
Got rolled by New England and so on. I mean, they were mysterious at times. And, it, you know, it just goes to show you that, you just think about this. The team that gave up the fewest points and the fewest total yards in the league gave up 42 points and 552 yards of total offense on Sunday.
Right. Russell, on the other side, the 49ers have not only won the last six times they've played the Rams, but I was looking back over the last several years. They're 26-1 against the Rams since 2008. When you look over the 49ers, why do they have such a domination over the Rams?
Well, I think the more recent numbers I look at because of Kyle Shanahan and the type of physical football team that they are. You know, those Rams teams for a while there were bad. You know, I remember when Sean McVay got there and they made the playoffs. I believe they hadn't been in the playoffs for like 12 years. So, but the physical style of the 49ers wears down the Rams. And, you know, whether people like to hear it or not, the Rams are still a little more finesse than they are power. Now they, you know, which is odd because they have arguably the best defensive player in the league, you know, not necessarily going to be defensive player of the year this year, but Aaron Donald has won it three times. And as far as an interior presence, I mean, he scares everyone. Okay. So, you would think that that would be show them a little physicality, but you remember when Wade Phillips was there a couple of years ago, as good as they were defensively in terms of sacks and takeaways, you could run the ball on them. And we've seen the Rams give up their share of rushing yards this year, even though they're ranked sixth. And, you know, when you're up 17-0 in your own building and the 49ers don't abandon the run, that should tell you something. So here they go again. It's going to be the third time. And it's not quite Friday yet because I haven't heard the dreaded,
well, it's hard to beat a team three times in one season, right?
Yep.
And as we know, that's factually inaccurate. So just a little perspective. Go back to 1970. There have been 22 occasions where a team swept the regular season series and then played the team in the playoffs. 14 times the team won the third game.
Yeah.
If you can beat a team six times in a row, why the hell can't you beat them three times in one season?
Right. Russell, the other thing we've been talking about
TV
tonight,
one day, guys, we just kind of went with it.
Russell, one of the other things we've been talking about tonight is comparing quarterbacks across eras, which is really difficult to do. You hear people talk about, you know, the greatest quarterback ever is obviously Tom Brady, but then we start looking at the numbers, right? And the quarterbacks in recent history, I mean, their completion percentages are in the upper 60s to low 70s. We were talking to Chris Miller about this earlier in the night. But when you kind of go back to, you know, the great quarterbacks, the quote-unquote great quarterbacks of the 80s and the 90s, when Chris was playing. I mean, John Elway's career completion percentage is in the mid-50s. Dan Marino is 59. You know, Joe Montana, it was 63. I mean, they were, if you were in the mid-50s, low-60s, boy, you were really at the top of the league. Nowadays, you're at the bottom of the league if you're in the upper 50s, low 60s, because guys are completing 74% of the passes. Talk about how great the quarterbacks were once upon a time versus trying to compare them to now. To me, you just simply can't. The game is too different.
Well, it is. And to me, there's a difference between being a great passer and a great quarterback. I'm one of those people who still throws Joe Montana in there just as much as Tom Brady in terms of the clutch aspect. And that's not a knock on. See, if you pick one, people think you're knocking the other. You're allowed to have two great quarterbacks. Okay. I mean, if you want to go to a farm. All right. I mean, it's so overplayed that, you know, if you like Peyton Manning, you can't like Tom Brady. If you like Roger Staubach, you can't like Terry Bradshaw. I mean, you know, it's almost like kiddie stuff. But you're right. You look at guys completing 70% of their passes now, and it is a totally different game, and it caters to the passing game. But, you know, for my money, the two scariest quarterbacks I ever saw, I mean, Montana's obviously up there as well, and Brady and Peyton and all that. But I'll do old school and go back to the 1970s. And there were two quarterbacks that you wanted to make damn sure there was no time left on the clock. One of them was Roger Staubach, and the other one was Kenny Stabler. And those were guys that the game was never over. And you saw it week in and week out. And, you know, the heroic. I think Kenny Stabler almost gets kind of forgotten in that regard. You know, he actually threw some of the most famous passes in the history of the league. See a hand. The ghost to the post. You know, people forget that the Immaculate Reception game, Kenny Stabler scored the Raiders only touchdown on like a 40 yard run. I think they forgot he was on the field. Okay. So that was the thing with Stabler. I mean, Stabler was, you know, he had that devil may care. You know, I read the playbook by the light of the jukebox, that whole, but boy, imagine how much it was to play with him. The wheeling and dealing with Fred Biletnikoff and Dave Casper, who never dropped a pass. And then a guy I hope gets in the Hall of Fame in a couple of weeks, Cliff Branch, because I think he's very, very overdue. Those Raider teams, yeah, just like the Vikings, they had the misfortune of running into, you know, the Dolphins and the Steelers when those were great teams.
Bob, questions for Russell?
Hey, Russ, I don't know if we've ever talked to you with us. So much to talk about. It's almost as if you can just pick any team in any division and there's a storyline behind it. And I think that's what I'm going to do tonight. So I'm looking at the standings and I went right to the middle. I'm going to pick Tennessee. And what comes to mind talking about Tennessee is, the first round of the loss after the bye week and Tannehill taking a beating from fans and everything, maybe for good measure because it wasn't pretty and they just kind of silently left the playoffs. And is Tannehill the answer going forward, Russ? What are we going to see from Tennessee from this day forward?
Well, what it showed you is that he needs to be in the surrounding with, and Tennessee still ran the ball. They wound up fifth in the league in rushing, which is almost amazing considering Derrick Henry missed most of the year. And Derrick Henry still finished in the top 10 in rushing, even though he didn't play most of the year. But the threat of him, and Derrick Henry is a refrigerator that you were pushing up a ramp and someone let go. Okay. And what he does, and we saw little flashes of him in the playoff game, but I mean, he hadn't played in a while and so on. And, you know, unfortunately for Ryan Tannehill, go back a couple of months. They lost at home to the Houston Texans and Tannehill threw four picks.
Right.
You know, so. This was a team last year that only turned over the ball 12 times. Okay. And a lot of that is Derrick Henry controlling the football. They had 25 turnovers during the regular season and three more in the playoffs. And you're not going to win a lot of games that way. They got nine sacks on Joe Burrow. and yet still couldn't stop him from throwing for over 300 yards. So, yeah, they very kind of, they went out with a whimper, not a bang, yeah, as a number one seed, and said, well, and both number one seeds kind of went out with a bang, a whimper, I should say. What it also showed you this past weekend, not to get off Tennessee for a second, is as much as we talk about quarterbacks in this league, you know, special teams, ask the Packers what special teams are about. Even right, the Buccaneers, did you, there were two plays in the Bucs Rams game that almost kind of get forgotten. Do you remember that on, after they had scored a couple of times, the Bucs kicked the ball out of bounds on the kickoff twice and gave the Rams the ball at the 40-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
That almost gets forgotten because of the way the game ended. The Rams won it and so on. We saw the rookie kicker with Cincinnati. He was tremendous. We saw, you know, all the game-winning kicks and so on. Tennessee, I still think they had a great year considering the circumstances, because if someone would have told you you're going to lose the NFL's leading rusher in 2019 and 2020 and a guy who had got off to an incredible start, which is not usually him. He's usually a guy who gets kind of off to a slow start and gains momentum. And they still wound up the top seed in the AFC for the first time since 2008. I mean, I still think it's a terrific year for them and so on, but it does leave you a little cold. It's 2 years in a row now. I mean, it wasn't that long ago they were in the AFC championship game against the Chiefs. And now the last 2 years they've won the division and are been one and done in the playoffs at home.
Russ, we got to talk about the Patriots here in New England. We had mentioned them earlier in the show. It definitely seems like they have a running game. We're going to call Mac Jones, you know, a step above a game manager for sure. It's obviously they need a playmaker or two, Russell, and we don't know if Coach Belichick is going to stick to his guns and try to win that old-fashioned way with the blue-collarness and everything like that. But what will they do, you think, in the off-season, Russ, and how much longer can Belichick do coach this team? I mean, it's amazing he keeps coming back, but he's got his work cut out for him here.
Yeah, but I will say this. After being 7-9 in 2020 and then losing four of their first six games this year, all of them at home, by the way,
right,
the buzzards, some people had the buzzards circling. And then all of a sudden they win seven in a row and they're back in the playoffs for the 12th time in 13 years. Although they faded down the stretch. Indianapolis mauled them with Jonathan Taylor a couple of weeks before that. Even though they blew out Tennessee, one of the Titans' bad games, the Titans ran for 270 yards against them. And then Buffalo played an almost flawless game and whacked them big time. I threw out this stat. You know, for as dominating as they were for two decades, the Bills have kind of flipped the script. Think about this. From 2000 to 2019, okay, Bill Belichick was 35-5 against the Bills. 35-5.
Wow.
The last 2 years, he's 1-4. So yeah, he's almost lost as many games in 2 years as he did 20 to this team.
Wow. Russell, I got to get your thoughts on my Steelers, because I feel like I'm about to enter the Bubby Brister, Neil O'Donnell era again now that Roethlisberger has retired. But to me, people are clamoring to go get we need a quarterback, let's draft a quarterback in the first round, all that sort of stuff. But to me, you put Tom Brady back there with that offensive line, that's not going to make any difference. I mean, to me, you got to go get the foundation fixed with the offensive line and the defensive line. Based on all the, you know, rushing yards we gave up over the last several games, that's where you got to start. Am I crazy? What are your thoughts?
Well, yes, you are crazy, but that has nothing to do with this conversation. No, you're exactly right. Not having Tyson Alualu and not having Stephon Tuitt hurt them a great deal. Okay, the trenches are where you win these things. Why do you think San Francisco is still alive? Okay. They're the best example of a team that is physical on the offensive line and wears down the opposition. So if you can't, right, and here's what I'll say about the Steelers, which I think also has led to their problem. First off, Devin Bush is coming off a year where of knee surgery, and you're never really good the year after you come back. I'll be more curious to see Devin Bush this coming year. Okay, I know a lot of people down on him and so on, but my good friend Sterling Sharp, who I used to work with at ESPN, said to me something one day that I never forgot. You know, if you're a team that doesn't run the ball in practice, how does your defense practice against the run? Riddle me that.
Good point.
Yeah. And they did try to run this year a lot more than they used to. And Najee Harris, who fumbled once all year, happened to be in a playoff game. Never put the ball on the ground the entire year. And a lot of promise. But this is a team that's been strapped by the salary cap for about 10 years. And I'm going to curious to see, not just because Ben Roethlisberger is gone, but is there going to be an evolution with how this team does its business? They've never had money to go out and get. I'm not saying you have to go out and get and break the bank and get a big name free agent, but you could keep some of the people you would have lost in previous years. So I'll be curious to see how they do business, kind of like the Packers did back in 2019, Matt LaFleur's first year. They signed Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith and Billy Turner and Adrian Amos, all the big contracts. Okay. And like, wow, Green Bay never spends any money. And they went out and did that. And those guys have been pretty good cornerstones for Matt LaFleur's team these past 3 years and so on. So do the Steelers do something like that? I'm also curious to see what kind of shot Mason Rudolph gets, because he's, even though he had to start in 2019, but when Ben went down, okay, Ben Roethlisberger's still part of the organization. And now it's really a chance for everybody to kind of start anew. And I understand people being down on them and so on, but after they lost to the Browns in the playoffs, people really gave them, you know, their death knell. And somehow again, they wound up in the playoffs because Baltimore and Cleveland completely fell apart, along with the Indianapolis Colts at Jacksonville in week 18. Okay. But they got there and they still have a young nucleus of players, but they got to do something about those trenches. Last year, I think they tried to do it with band-aids and kite string and super glue and all that stuff. They did draft a couple of offensive linemen, Dan Moore and the center who, I don't even know if he's going to be a center anymore, Kendrick Green.
Right.
That for all the people who want them to go after a quarterback in the first round, I would be, I think I'd go after the best offensive lineman. He could change things. We have seen offensive linemen, quality offensive linemen, come in here and change the mentality of a team. See Quentin Nelson in Indianapolis.
Yeah, good point. Russell, before we let you go, social media is a pretty negative place at times. We try to spotlight the positive every week. We try to highlight two players doing great things out there in their communities. We try to keep it on an upbeat pace, on an upbeat kind of mentality here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look around, you told us this on the show a couple of years ago. Everybody seems to get focused on who lost the game and why they lost it for their team or whatever. It's always about who lost it and why they lost it. It's not about who won the game and why they won it. Why is that?
I don't know. There is a fan mentality, not all, and I don't like the broad strokes. So it's not all the fans. It's not all of our fellow media. There's almost like a, you know, people act like teams owe them something. Okay. I've never gotten it. And I think the thing that's bothered me the most, and you know, in recent years, you know, there used to be a saying, no cheering in the press box. Okay. And I kind of stick to that for my own purposes and so on, because I think it's important to be objective. But a thing I see now from fans as well as some of the media is actually rooting against players. Okay. And not wanting them to do well for their own purposes.
So they can write an article about it? What's their own purpose? Why would that be?
I don't know. So they can go on sports radio or a podcast and rant? Okay? I mean, that's what I'm just telling you what I see. It used to be, okay, If a writer or a fan didn't like somebody, of course, now we have social media, so this stuff is all more resonant and so on. But there's almost like, I told you he wasn't that good of a player, blah, 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 blah type of thing, rather than, I don't understand it. You're rooting against people. And it's not even so much you're rooting against them because you like the other team. You're almost like you're rooting against them because you don't like them personally, which I'll never understand because, most of us don't know these people other than when they stay on the field. I mean, a guy drops a pass, you think he's, he should be arrested. Okay? I misses a kick. My God, he's the worst human being in the world. Okay? So, no, I'm 100% on board. It's just, there's almost like a vindictiveness and a nastiness that didn't even exist, or maybe I didn't know about it, and maybe people have been like that, and now they're a little more vocal about it. But it's like, it boggles the mind. To me, I like to watch football because I enjoy the game. Okay? I don't watch for a certain team to win and turn off the game, in the second quarter because my team's not winning. Okay? And you see that, to me at least, you see it more and more. But again, maybe I'm just more aware of it because I follow a lot of people and I hear a lot of people and I watch, the debate shows at times and the different personalities and so on. I'm starting to wonder if how many people actually enjoy what we do.
Yep, 100%. Russell, before we let you go, remind our listeners all the places they can find you.
Okay. Dak's Football Guru on Twitter. Pro Football Guru is on Instagram. It's also on Facebook. Julian Boyd and I we haven't done a podcast in a while, but we are still writing. We have a fun piece coming up this week about the Bengals, as a matter of fact. So follow, Jules Loves Blue and PFG Vibe on Twitter. And it's always great to hear from you guys. And the Super Bowl should be fun. And could it be San Francisco? And that would be fun. I mean, I think both the home teams win this week. And I'll leave you with this thought. We went 54 years without a team playing the Super Bowl in its home stadium. Are we on the verge of seeing it 2 years in a row?
Yeah, 2 years in a row. Wouldn't that be something? Yep.
And somebody will complain about that, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
All I want is it in Pittsburgh next year. That's what I want. Then we get 2 years in a row and someone's hoped out. I want it in Pittsburgh. Help me with that.
I was in a discussion with somebody last week about, a Super Bowl in Green Bay and so on. And I tried to explain to them, as much as the weather plays a part, hotel accommodations play a part as well. They had the Super Bowl in New York. Safe to say there was a few hotels around. I remember the Super Bowl in Jacksonville, where they put the press on boats. I'm not kidding. Cruise ships or whatever. So it was kind of like the temporary place for some of the press to stay and so on. So when you bid for the Super Bowl, you got to be able to accommodate so many people. And if you get a Super Bowl, as it's a boon for your city in terms of money and all those different things. But you got to be able to house the media and the players and their families and all the fans.
Russ, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of this show. You're one of our all-time favorites, my friend. We can't thank you enough. All the best to you and your family.
Enjoy the game.
Oh, thank you very, very much. Tomorrow will be 16 days into the Super Bowl. That's Joe Montana, right?
Or Lenny Dawson for those.
George
Blanton. Or Lenny Dawson. And whose birthday tomorrow, Bob? For people who don't know out there, Bob knows every player in NFL history's birthday.
Yeah, with a little help from Pro Football Reference. But I'll send you one tomorrow, Russ.
You got it.
Take care, Russ. All the best to your family. Stay safe.
Guys.
Take care, Russell. That's the great Russell Baxter. And again, give him a follow on Twitter. Bax Football Guru. All right, when Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday Night Tailgate Spotlight on the positive. Hear two more stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities. We'll do it right on the other side of this real quick station break.